Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Welcome to Nerdist Podcast number 866. This is the second episode of Talking with Chris Hardwick on Nerdist. The cast of Silicon Valley, or a chunk of them. It's Middleditch, Martin Starr, Zach Woods. We're on the talking show, which is on AMC Sunday nights at 11, 10 Central. And we tried to cobble together as much of the cast as we could, but Kumail was out promoting the movie with – he was at a festival with Emily Gordon promoting The Big Sick, and Amanda Crew was also unavailable. So we got these three amazing guys, and they're just funny as shit. I mean, they're all equally funny in completely different ways. You know, Middleditch has such a great energy, and everything Zach Wood says is so fucking funny. And then Martin Starr is hilariously dry. I mean, it's just – they're so great together. So we had been saying, you know, the plan is to put out the – I was originally seeing the unedited version of the show, which I have to say I'm not sure is 100% accurate. There are actually little edits here and there because, you know, we go to commercials. Sometimes we retake things, you know, like intros and outros and stuff. So it's not like 100% raw, unedited – but it is a very extended version, so I would feel bad if I felt like I was lying about what it actually is. But it is extended. Thank you for nodding, Katie Levine. And so that's what it'll be. So I think we'll probably change the language to unedited because that's technically untrue. It's technically an extended version, but it's a greatly extended version. The TV version is like 41 minutes, and I think this is what's the running time on this one?
1:30.
It's like it's an hour and a half. This is incredibly extended. So there you go. So that's as much as we could cram into a podcast, I think. And so that's it. Yeah, please watch the show. First of all, season 4 premiere of Silicon Valley Sunday, April 23rd on HBO and HBO Go or HBO Now, and then. My show, Talking with Chris Hardwick, Sunday nights, AMC, 11, 10 Central. And happy to announce that it is on iTunes. And it's starting to appear on digital platforms around. But you can buy the season on iTunes and it gets released, you know, like the morning after it airs. So like early Monday morning, the episodes pop up on iTunes. So there you go. Nerdist Podcast number 866, Talking with Chris Hardwick, cast of Silicon Valley. Most of them. Katie, roll the thing.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
We've all heard from you on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook using @talking, so I'm going to read your questions and comments and your comments and even showing some video message that you sent in for the guys. Plus, our studio audience later on is going to have the chance to come up and ask their questions. I'm going to give them prizes and toys because that's what I do. But let's get to it. So, first of all, congratulations on the success of the show. It is a phenomenal, phenomenal program.
Thank you. Thanks. I take full credit.
You take full credit for it?
Yes, I do.
Despite the fact that Mike Judge did any credit for that whatsoever?
I don't know who you're talking about. All
well,
I'm
he created
is,
the show. He's BBB was about
to never heard of him. When I thought of the show.
you definitely did not think of the show.
Okay. All right. I agree to disagree. I'll see you in court, man.
We were going to take partial credit, but it's been,
yeah, it's been taken. Credit's on a first dibs.
Yeah, I even chimed in with a thank you, but clearly it wasn't a valuable thank
you. So you're going to take everyone to court over this now?
This is very litigious.
It's incredibly aggressive.
Team a lawyer.
right off the bat.
Yeah.
But the show...
It's just one of those shows. I remember when it came on a handful of years ago now, I was really excited because I knew most of the people on the show. And I was like, oh, everyone, you know, I know how funny these people are. Everyone's going to see up. But, like, right away, the show didn't even have... There wasn't that period where it had to find its footing. It was funny from minute one of the show. So what do you guys attribute that to? Did you all know each other before?
Most of us.
Yeah, I had met Martin through the show and Amanda Crew and Josh Brenner. But, like, you know... It just so happened that a lot of us had been not only known each other for some time, but like been performing comedy together for a while. And I don't think Mike and everybody knew that. I think that was a happy accident. They just sort of found out like, oh, you guys know each other and are all friends? Great.
Yeah, we knew each other in New York. And Martin, we'd never met, but Martin was one of my heroes because of Bill Havlicek was like one of my favorite TV performers of all time.
You came in totally blind to the entire
thing.
Don't
know what they're talking about. This whole, we knew everybody, we all performed comedy together. Not me.
He's actively maintained great emotional distance from us in a way that feels, frankly, deeply hurtful.
Martin has sort of built, he's sort of built an island of himself in the cast. And
we even shoot my scenes. Like, if you notice, I'm always off in the corner.
Yeah.
I'm just, I green screen me in.
Yeah, they're usually shot on a totally different
thing. Now, you even see this defensive body posture. I see the arms across. He doesn't really want to be a part of this in any way.
Yeah.
We call him, he's sort of like an Alcatraz. He's an island and fortified to the point where you can neither get in or out.
I'm stuck here. Did everyone have improv training? Was it improv and sketch?
For me, improv. Sketch and a little bit of Stundup, but
That's Austrian for...
For stand-up?
Stand-up comedy.
Yeah, good, yeah.
That's how I met Zach, Kumail, and TJ, all through various comedy scenes in New York and Chicago.
Yeah, that's my background is improv. What was...
Also improv, but not in the same, not in the UCB of it all. It was more one-on-one.
Mm. When did you guys realize comedy was an option? I mean, because it's not... I'm always interested to hear when someone's a little kid that they don't fall into the traditional, like, oh, I'm going to... Just get a regular job. Like, comedy is such a weird thing to pursue that I don't think it's... And when people say, why do you do comedy? I was like, well, I don't know if it was really a choice.
Yeah, I was going to say option. more like method of survival.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think for me, I was kind of a loner, weirdo, got teased a bunch, and then my eighth grade drama teacher just decided to put me in a play. And it wasn't necessarily asking me. He's just like, I think this would be good for you. And it really was. It, like, changed everything. I got involved in, like, school theater, community theater, and, like, within a year, like, all the kids that were making fun of me were now my friends.
Oh, really?
And I didn't care at that point. I was like, oh, thank you.
What would they make fun of you about?
Oh, I don't know. I was pretty sensitive kid, so easy to rile up. I mean, you could call me...
You're among friends. You know that,
it's
right?
No,
these
yeah.
people, these are your friends.
No, it's stupid now, but like even just saying like a Thomas middle bitch would like really get me pissed off, and I'd be crying, and they'd be.
You're saying this to the guy whose last name is Hardwick.
Yeah. Okay.
So I completely understand.
Yeah. What could they do with that?
Chris Hard.
Hard dick? That sounds...
Oh, dope. My God! I never thought of that before!
That's a boner,
that's
man!
That's crazy!
Awesome. You're like...
saying you're potent.
Yeah, you're walking Viagra.
Yeah, I wish I had responded in sixth grade with, you're just jealous because I'm potent. It's just any kind of taunting. Kids are so fucking mean. Kids are so mean, and... You know, comedy is just that perfect armor, but not everyone has it.
Yeah, and it's hard to tap into it because there's, I think, plenty of weirdos just like still just kind of remain weird and don't necessarily go into comedy. Like it takes a bit of cultivation and I think a bit of maybe some guidance. So, hats off to a school system that had an arts program because I think it like totally saved me.
What about you, Zach? When did you discover it was an option?
When I was in high school, my brother went to college in New York and he'd gone to the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater and he told me about it. So I started taking classes there. But before that, it had never occurred to me as an option. I was just like a weird little kid.
You were dead set on being a barrister.
Yeah, I was going to be.
Oh, interesting.
I had a lot of contempt for American lawyers, but
so you
British
wanted to
lawyers,
go into British law,
It was going to mostly be maritime stuff, especially.
Oh, of course, I mean, specialized. They always say specialized.
He had the little wig picked out.
Sure.
It was
the robes, the wig, and the robes.
I would powder it every day.
One day you'll be mine.
Working on this noise lock.
I wanted to be a musician for a while. I thought I was going to be a jazz musician. But when I was little, I never even, I was sort of similar. As a strange boy, I would, I remember watching and rewatching and rewatching Linda Ronstadt and Kevin Kline and the Pirates of Penzance.
Sure.
It was a musical. I had a brief flirtation with karate.
I Explain. Had it with Taekwondo.
Yeah, really? Me too with Taekwondo.
Did you guys
we
stick with it?
Because
I feel like I got real excited when my parents got the gi and the belt, and I went like two times. I'm like, oh, this is a lot of work.
Well, I had a bad. I took karate at the Jewish Community Center.
Sure,
we're all great karate masters.
Wax on, wax off, whatever.
Whatever you want.
Relax.
Yeah, come on. And I had this sensei who was this like very kind lesbian woman. I forget what her name was. She was like very strong and very kind eyes. And I was not a good karate person.
And, as they are technically known.
As they're technically known. And I remember peeing in my gi at karate class. Not only could I not defend myself against other attackers, I couldn't defend myself against my own bladder and
I feel like that's a good defensive tactic, though. If someone attacks you, just piss your pants. And they'll absolutely leave you alone.
That might have been one of the lessons that you forgot and just went right to it.
Why did you pee your gi?
As an act of aggression against the rest of the class.
I'm breaking eye contact with everyone in the class.
While it's happening.
And it wasn't something that you got chastised for. Everyone was like, Zach!
Fill it up!
My God!
Someone's a yellow belt.
Oh, no, I had a vitamin deficiency, so it was still a white belt.
Still a white belt. Okay, gotcha.
I'd asked the sensei, I was like, can I go to the bathroom? And she was like in the middle of describing self-defense technique, and she got lost. She was like, yeah, in a sec, and then she kept describing roundhouses or whatever, and she forgot about me, and I was too frightened to like remind her that I was a human with needs. And so then I was just like, well, I guess the only available option left is to just piss on the floor of the Jewish Community Center.
Oh, wow. And were you invited back at that point, or was it?
I think it was a soft dismissal. Just let me go. I had to submit my resignation.
Oh, you did, yeah. Just sign your name and pee on the wall.
Zach. Thank you for that pantomime, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. I was trying to be generous.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot thinner at the base than it was at the...
Yeah, I have a conical...
It goes out.
It's sort of
like a trumpet.
Like a trumpet, or it's
a
just
tulip.
Like it's like sound dispersal. It just goes out
that's
in a cone.
It was drawn
that's
by
why
Dr.
you
Zeus.
Learned the trumpet.
Yeah, I was
because
like,
you
I
were like, this looks familiar.
So anyway, not that I've been spying on you, but I just wanted to make sure that it was anatomically correct if I was going to.
That's right, yes.
Whereas Middle Ditch, it would be more of a...
It's a coil shape.
It's an
electric motor. I got to yellow belt in Taekwondo, and this is after like doing all the forms, and like you'd kick these pads and my feet would hurt. I was such a weakling, and I got to yellow belt, and I saw everybody had like... fighting gear on, sparring gear, and I was like, wait, what's going on here? And they're like, congrats, man, you yellow belt. You get to spar now. And I was like, nope. And I turned around and walked out. That was the last time I did Taekwondo.
Are you not inspired at all by Karate Kid?
Are you telling me there's actual fighting involved?
No.
I was in it for the fashion only.
I was in it for the fashion.
Yeah. I just thought those nice, clean, white clothes.
The belts. I love colored belts.
Yeah.
Did you do it?
I got to the same point. I probably fought twice and got my ass kicked. And then I was like, oh, this is too much for me. I can't handle the emotional distress that just going to class causes me.
I thought the discipline that Karate Kid promised sounded really good. But then I realized discipline sucks. It's hard work. It's time consuming. Yeah. And it's incredibly painful at the same time.
Yeah, life isn't an 80s movie where if you just kind of believe hard enough, you can kind of
I know.
Get it.
Where you can
believe muscles.
You can train for 3.5 weeks and beat people who've been doing karate their entire lives.
Yeah.
Who have something to prove.
In high school, friends of mine had a fight club in a drainage ditch near one of their houses. And I would fight.
Friends?
Friends, yeah. Friends. But I would, are you skeptical? is the skepticism about...
No, just that your friend, that you'd have a group of friends.
Hey. You were a loser.
You pissed your key. Why would you? Come on. What do you expect from these people?
I would fight, but I would only fight kids who were significantly smaller than me, and I could hit them in the face, but they could only hit my body.
That's cool.
Because were you always super tall?
No, I don't mean physically. I mean, like, legally. I was like, you can't hit me.
Oh, gotcha. Because you're a Jew. Yeah.
So you laid down the law.
Barrister style.
What was your karate experience?
Terrible. I feel like we've heard enough about. I mean, I've got the same stories. It's just horror. I hated it.
This show's about karate, right?
This is all about karate.
Yeah. Talking karate with Chris Hardwick.
I only went because my mom was like, "Take him for a while after school." She was like, "Just keep you. Can you guys hold on to him for me until I get off work?" So I just like sat there and did karate until I was finally like, "Mom, I can't do this anymore."
So the two times that you went?
No, I went for 2 years, I think.
Oh, wow.
I went into the middle of the ring and was like, I don't want to do this anymore. A few times.
You announced?
I had to really work myself up just to like confront my mom about not doing it anymore. That's how bad it
is. Can I have everyone's attention, please?
I do not want to do this anymore.
Everyone here at the All Valley Karate Tournament or wherever it is you guys were. But Freaks and Geeks is one of those shows that... that to this day, people still, I'm sure that must be one of the most asked things. Before Silicon Valley, I'm sure that was probably one of the most asked things you got.
I don't know. What do you mean?
Well, Freaks and Geeks is a show that you were on that Judd Apatow produced.
Yeah, I'm aware of that, yeah. I mean, yeah. I still don't fully understand the question, I don't think.
The question is, would you like to get back into karate?
Yes. At this point, because I think I'm ready.
We got your old instructor.
Come on out.
Oh, no. Oh, God, guys. I can't handle this.
Mercy is for the weak.
My old instructor for Taekwondo was a woman called, what was her first name? She was my French immersion instructor. Her name was Madame Guinette. And she was like, she was so Quebecois. Her accent was so insane. And she was also our French teacher. And she had a habit of like, reaching down her like loose neck sweaters and just sort of like scratching her chest as so she'd be like, "Les garçons là, and then voilà." And like we're just like, is no one addressing this? She's scratching her tits right now.
Was this the forest? Was this person a bear? Was this person actually a bear?
No. She is a woman.
So you said
Chris.
So you said Quebecois. You grew up in Montreal?
No, in British Columbia, but I'm trying.
Where she was a transplant.
Yeah, we needed French immersion teachers. The math isn't hard on this, guys. you want to get people who know French to teach kids French. So we had some Quebecois teachers over there.
But she was also a karate instructor.
Yeah, Taekwondo. And her brother was like a national champ for a while. So, you know, wow. Just chill. Chill, dude. All y'all need to chill, man.
Are you okay? Your body's contorting. Are you all right?
It's just into a coma.
Would you need smelling salts?
You just have to wait it out.
But I do want to talk about Freaks and Geeks for a second because Freaks and Geeks is one of those shows that sort of changed the way comedy was done on television, and there was a real shift at that time from going from like big broad 3-4 camera sitcoms to like really solid authentic single camera comedy storytelling. But you were like 16 when Freaks and Geeks started, right?
Yeah.
What do you remember about the experience?
Just being a kid running around having a great time. But not the, like, what made it great was what Paul and Judd did behind the scenes. I just enjoyed it. I don't remember thinking anything about the quality of it. I just loved the experience.
And I know you've been working a lot since you were a kid. Was that your first time, like, on a series for an extended period?
Oh, yeah, for sure. But, I mean, what you're talking about, too, is, like, Roseanne felt like that. Much earlier, like what Freaks and Geeks did, I think that I love so much, and I still connect with, and could at that point as well, is how real it was. Like all those stories came from the writers.
Right.
There was nothing that was like forced or pushed. They sat in a room and they were like, "What's the dumbest, craziest, weirdest shit that ever happened to every one of you?" And they mashed that together and made every episode out of real experiences. And Roseanne feels like I don't know. I just love Roseanne. I don't know why that popped in my head. But
every time we do press, anyway, pitches Roseanne so hard.
If it's not coming back, it should. So they're rebooting everything, Roseanne.
I think it actually is, to be honest with you.
Really?
I would hope so.
I think they are actually Brandon, can you check that in the booth legitimately? I think Roseanne is actually coming back. You don't have earpieces in.
Sorry?
None of you are talking. None of you have earpieces in.
Can I get a little volume?
You don't get any volume because
Brandon,
there's no piece in your ear.
Brandon, can I get
you
a little volume?
You don't have one of these.
If I don't have a piece, who's talking? Who's there?
Why do I hear Brandon?
It's Madame Gannett.
If there's no piece, who keeps telling me I'm dirty?
It's Madame Gannett.
You're dirty. You need to be clean. It's you.
Thomas, sweep the leg. Sweep the leg, Thomas. I want to hear about when you started doing improv in New York, because I know you were pretty young.
Yeah.
And your parents just let you go into the city by yourself as a child?
Yeah, they would pay for my train tickets. It was probably a similar thing, like, go, be away.
Yeah, get out of here.
I'd go up to New York, and I'd be up there late at night, and they were cool with it, because I was taking these improv classes.
But they were probably also, like their friends are like, don't you think you might get into drugs or something? And they're like, Zach?
Yeah, not worried about it.
Yeah, he'll be fine, probably.
Like, we hope. He really needs to loosen up.
We've been slipping ecstasy in his back pocket. He hasn't noticed.
We gave him MDMA for Monica, but no luck. Mostly it was, you know, this was the time in New York where there's still some
sort of... You gotta understand, this is the late 90s.
This is the 1900s we're talking about here. Times were different.
Yeah,
genes were wider.
Steam engines once in a while you'd run into like an off-color character, but on the whole it was pretty good. A shoe fetishist once accosted me.
As they do.
Not even the shoe, not the feet, not a foot fetishist.
I think
he was
a shoe guy.
He liked sexualizing shoes.
I'm guessing. He came up to me. This guy, I was in high school. I was walking down the street and it was winter. This guy came, all right.
Yeah.
We just see like a conical shape form.
Get to the shoe. Get to the shoe.
This guy was like really well dressed in this overcoat and very sort of put together, and he came up to me on the street and was like, I work for Converse. I've noticed your shoes are distressed in just such a way that would be perfect for our ad campaign. I'd like to buy them.
Oh.
And I was like, can I see your card? And he was like, it's in my car. And I was like, okay. I was like, well, I need my shoes. It's winter and I have to walk to a place. And he was like, I'll give you $75 for your shoes. And I was like, I'm sorry, I still need them. And he's like, I'll give you $100 for your shoes. And he got like more and more intense. And eventually I just walked away. And in retrospect, should have sold him the shoes.
Yeah.
He needed them.
For what?
For the Converse ad.
Yeah, for the ad. I saw that ad, and I was like, they really could have used
me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were you wearing Converse?
Yeah, they were dirty, like Converse, like $10 Converse shoes. So I could have made a
700%. Oh, yeah, he was going to fuck those shoes.
He was going to have sex with the shoes.
He was going to have sex with your shoes.
When did I don't want to give away the punchline, but the fashion advice from the guy in the car happened. Remember?
Oh, yeah. I used to wear a fedora because I wanted to be a jazz musician, but none of the other clothes that go with a fedora.
Was there an instrument involved in this or just a fedora?
He was a trumpeter.
I played trumpet, but the fedora
was... He still plays, which if we could get him to take out his two trumpets and play them.
I'll do it. But I was walking down the street in New York. This is another New York thing. I was walking down the street in New York, and a guy in a car pulled up in an intersection, leaned over and rolled down the window and went, lose the hat, and then drove away.
It's what you want to say to anyone wearing a fedora.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, lose the hat.
And then you immediately threw it in the trash, right?
Yeah, I threw it straight in the trash.
And it was like, that sounds like from The Social Network when Sean Parker's like, lose the in the Facebook, and it just changed. That just changed his life after that. Did you disavow the fedora at that point?
Got rid of it completely, threw it in the trash, went home and peed my ghee.
Same one.
Yeah, that's how he relaxes.
But you, I feel like when you were on the podcast, did you tell me that you did improv on a cruise ship?
Yeah.
Because I've had this conversation before, but sometimes people think comedy is just a thing that you can just put anywhere. Like, yeah. Oh, it's just comedy. You can just stick it anywhere and it'll work. Like, well, you kind of need some certain rules to set it up so that the show works well. How did you get involved in improv cruise ship comedy?
Well, it's through Second City. So Second City, you know, based out of Chicago and many other places, they have a deal with Norwegian Cruise Lines so that they can be one of the acts on some of their bigger ships. So that if you take a Norwegian Cruise Line show, you may see the dance crew, you may see a magician, and on Tuesday nights or whatever, you go to the theater and you see Second City. And you do archive sketches like old, you know, famous Second City sketches like, you know, stuff that Steve Carell and all kinds of other people have done. And then on the off nights, you go up to this lounge and do, like, short-form improv with, like, handheld mics and stuff.
I need a suggestion from the audience.
Yeah, whose line is it anyway style, like, just playing these games and then that's it. And to be honest, none of this stuff was, like, I mean, of my 4 months at sea, the comedy elements are not the things that stick in my mind. It's, like, the endless hours of free time, the drinking, the weird... just the weird aspect of being in kind of like a floating luxury prison. Like,
yes.
You can't leave, but at the same time, it's like, it's 8 p.m., I'll just go upstairs and have some crepes and just get someone to make them for me. And it's just like, you know, at that time, you know, being 24, that was like pretty special, just all day crepes.
And, well, I hope you had the licenses for those, just in terms of maritime.
Yeah, you know, he's going to be a maritime barrister.
Because I will nail you guys.
You're not
finally.
Okay, but you never went through the process of becoming
a
barrister.
I have the confidence of an actual barrister.
But so. Not the accent or the anything.
What is the sound? What is the sound again?
That I'm a maritime like a, barrister.
Yeah, do it again. He did
bark?
It. I can't do it very well.
No,
anyway,
yours was,
but I didn't mean to derail
was,
your.
No, no, not at all.
More mouth queefy. I think.
That's what my family calls me.
There he is. Old mouth queefy.
It's Zach. Would you please just call me Zach?
My name. So just thank your lucky stars for hard dick as your nickname.
No, I guess I didn't get
mouth queef.
But anyway, sorry.
Well, there wasn't much else to say other than just like, it's just a very surreal life. You're like, your life gets put on pause because you just experienced this boat and the crew members around it.
Was it good? Were the shows good? Were the shows go well? Or
they were fun. I mean, look, for me at the time, those were like 2,000 seat theaters. Like, they're huge. These boats are massive. And so for me, it was kind of cool in that sense. You know, you're playing, you may be doing a little bit of dated material, and some of the improv wasn't the strongest. But I mean, it was a good time in that respect. But just trying to kill all the time in the day was another.
I mean, you are when you're
challenge.
On a cruise ship and you look around in every direction and you see nothing but water, and you realize we are legitimately trapped.
It was kind of interesting. Like, so for 4 months, so half the time we ported out of New York, and for the summer did like the Bahamas, Bermuda, and we got a lot of like working class Jersey, Bronx, Queens. Like, I saw my very first Guidos with the haircuts. And you'd be anonymous, and then you'd do the show, and then you'd be walking around the ship and be like, oh, Second City, let me buy you a shot. This guy, yeah, I fucking love this guy. And it was, you know, that aspect was fun, but you know, like, pretty debaucherous, like teens getting caught, like fangering each other on the floor and stuff.
It was fangering.
Fangering.
That's how you pronounce it.
Drunk, passed out people getting on board from like the private island and like all red as a lobster because they've just been baked alive in the sun.
Yeah.
And then the crew switched to like a fall, like watch the leaves turn cruise, and it's like Boston, Bar Harbor, Newfoundland, Quebec City. Everyone's like 50 plus. Everyone's in bed by 9. They literally started playing like the Andrews Sisters on the PA.
Oh,
like,
wow.
Sounds nice.
I loved it way more. I was like, now this is a cruise. And so, I don't know. It was just a bunch of weird experiences.
And did you audition for SNL?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, like the day, like 2 days after I got on the ship, after putting all this time in Chicago and assuming I was the greatest, that we got word that like SNL was coming to Chicago to like test people, to have a showcase and maybe bring them out. And I was like, are you kidding me? I'm on the boat right now. And I made a big tra-la and then actually like got off on Bermuda, flew to Chicago, did the showcase, flew to New York, met up with the cruise ship, and eventually got a test out of it. And even when I tested, I was still working on the cruise ship. So, flew from some island, went to New York, had a couple days, tested, and then walked back onto the cruise ship being like, okay, I got to finish this up to see if I...
What was your SNL audition?
Aces. I can't remember all, what I did. I did, who are my impressions? I did, who's the lead singer of Coldplay?
Tony Danza. Oh, Chris Martin.
I could Chris Martin just because I get told I look like him. I did Seth Meyers because I get told I look like him. Mm. And then I did my impression of Kira Sedgwick's The Closer. You remember that show?
Oh, my God. Classic.
I just did an impression of the show.
TNT.
Of just being, yeah, of just being like, it was something dumb like, you think you're going to solve this crime? You're just a woman. And then just being like, oh, what's under here? Oh, the clue to the crime. Oops, I solved it. And like, it was so dumb. they go in. When you test, they go in like, you know, it's not going to go well. I mean, they just prep you. Like, don't be alarmed if no one laughs. And I mean, like, I walked out there being like, they loved it. And, you know, for a second, I thought it was going to happen. But
you're probably like the only person who went from an SNL audition back to something that felt more surreal than the SNL. Like to go to a ship in the middle of the ocean is like most people, that's probably the apex of the surreality of their life at that time.
Yeah.
But I've heard that SNL audition can be really strange because you know, it's like people prepare these characters. It's like, you know, they get super, super, super A-list material that they've worked on for their entire comedy careers. And they're probably used to having them kill.
Right.
Yeah. And they go into a room with just a couple people who are just staring analytically at what they're doing. And it can really throw people off if they're not riding the kind of the wave of the energy and the laughter.
You got to get the thing I sort of figured is like you get such a short amount of time and you can't really let like a bit develop. So part of your impression or your character or something also has to be like as if it were a premise heavy joke. Mm-hmm. So if you're only doing like 30 seconds per thing, it's like, what is the weirdest thing that I can do? I mean, as I said, like I wasn't necessarily doing an impression of Kira Sedgwick, just the show, and it wasn't even an accurate one. But as long as it was funny, I figured it would be okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. Because I'm like an expert on like testing for SNL.
Yeah. How many times have you tested now?
Like once, but like
okay.
If anyone has any tips, I do a workshop.
I want to talk to Martin a little bit about we dug up your McDonald's commercial from when you were a tiny, tiny child.
It's my fault. I told you about it. Take full responsibility here. You're not to blame.
Okay, good. Good, because we're going to show it really fast. And then...
do you want me to set it up?
Well, will you please set it up?
Yeah. Gladly. Okay. So, I think you guys can only show the last little bit of it. So yeah. I'll set it up. The whole commercial is like this girl who's like, I like this guy. He goes to McDonald's all the time. We hang out at McDonald's. It was great. And then cut to me sitting on her bed, and it's my sister, and I'm reading her diary. And I say something like... Do you have the bit where I actually say his name?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
well, then I'll just let you hear that. And then at the end of it, there's an accident that happens that really happened, and they left it in the commercial because they were like, oh, this is going to kill. Let's just leave this in. This is funny. But I actually get hurt. So you'll hear me getting hurt as like a child.
Did you run into something? What happened?
I fell off the bed and hit a light that was behind the bed. And it was like a studio light, like this big, just like wrought iron, just like massive thing. And I was, you know, I was all of like 2.5 feet tall. And so I'm like, I jump up on the bed to run away from her, doing some improv. It was just a little improvisation. I ran away from her because she's my sister and she's mad at me. Anyway, you're going to love it.
All right. So I guess whatever sort of injury you hear at the end is 100% true.
Let's legit. Take a look.
Brian Sweeney, totally neat. That guy? David! You're dead.
But they cut it. They like cut it so that came later. Like I fell off the bed, hit the light, and then went, ah! And they were just like, we don't have time for all that, so let's just put that at the very end.
Sound effect in there.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I am. I mean, still here, right?
Well, I know it didn't kill you. No, unless you're a ghost.
Yeah. He's a serial killer now. You went full.
That's when my life changed and I started killing people.
Yeah. Whatever happened to Brian Sweeney?
That guy.
I bet Brian Sweeney was probably. Brian Sweeney's running up to people in New York and asking if he can buy their shoes.
I bet
that's probably what happened to that kid.
Or giving him fashion advice.
Lose the hat. I'm Brian Sweeney.
Remember? From the McDonald's commercial.
Did you work a ton commercially as a kid?
I did a few. That was I remember I did like an industrial where I had to say, I created a website for lactose intolerant mountain bikers. And the guy who was directing it he was just like trying different things and I wasn't picking up on it because I was like so unfamiliar with like the inner workings of a set. I was used to like just improvising in small groups in class. And I loved that. And then this guy was like, what did you do? I was like, built a website for lactose intolerant mountain bikers. Like, I didn't understand what was going on. He wasn't like, action, or say it again. Like, I understand simple phrases like that. But he was like talking to me like a human, and I was like, I don't understand. Are we shooting this, or am I just supposed to say my line? And so, like, he like got upset with me. I remember him being like frustrated. He's like, this kid doesn't fucking get it.
Well, the whole process is so... to get on anything is ridiculous. Is anyone actors in the audience? Yeah. No, a couple of you. The audition. Oh, it was like four of you. I'm surprised the number's so low here in Los Angeles. Okay, five. Thank you for taking it up a notch. But just the idea that, I mean, that's a whole separate skill set. The audition process is an entirely separate. Mm-hmm. So do you find that you do on a project what you would do in the audition, or is it just feels so artificial to me?
I remember commercial auditions being like the most depressing. They're real tough. There's one I had to do where you cut. It was because they're in the morning a lot of the time. Like it was in New York. It was in the morning.
Late casting directors.
Late sleeper.
They're also seeing like 200 people.
Yeah.
They're just like, and most of them are like. Like Hollywood Boulevard guys, like the Superman and stuff. So I mean to say a bit off.
Sure.
Nothing wrong with that gig. Oh God, I'm gonna get the Superman union on me. But you know who you are. You're all fucking weird, dude. There's no way around.
Well, you are really doubling down right now.
What are they watching this? Yeah, right.
They're out being Superman.
They're out being Superman.
Stopping fake crimes in Hollywood Boulevard.
Yeah, for photo money.
I hope that you get in a long-standing feud with the Hollywood.
I just want it.
Middle Ditch slams Superman.
Superman outraged at Thomas Middle Ditch.
The Batman chime in too, as well as the
Captain Jack Sparrow.
I don't approve of this at all. I don't.
Yeah, all the minions are like, meet up, poop, poop, or what the fuck they say.
Yeah. Wow, you are going. After
go
everyone
after
him, is anyone's is
Hollywood's a joke, man.
What? Don't you say that.
I did one where I had to. I showed up and they were like, "Take your shirt off," and I was like, "Okay." And they were like, "Now, great. Now put on this Rastafarian wig." And I was like,
"What?"
I was like, "All right." So it's like in the morning, and I'm wearing this Rastafarian wig, and I have this thing in my chest called a pectus, which is like an indentation. So immediately, like, I took off my shirt and I saw the casting director just go like. And I knew I wasn't going to get the part, but they were like, you know what, unfortunately there's not enough guys here, would you mind hanging out for like about 45 minutes and we'll just audition women with you. And so I just stood, Thomas, I was shirtless in a Rasta wig, women would come in and I'd have to feed them candy. After another.
This is the emotional equivalent of peeing in your gi.
Yes.
Yes.
This was someone else peeing on my gi.
while you were in it. But it is
toughy.
You know, it's
so
it wasn't great.
I feel like it's important to go through those moments just to see, like, you know, because that is 100% dues paying. That's 100% dues paying. But they really legitimately just treat you like garbage in the commercial audition.
Well, I look at it, it's got to be hard at one point, and for probably a while, because you think about like what the end result is like, just like you get to do what you love. Yeah. People say, hey, I like you, and then you get paid.
Yeah.
Like, that's too good of a gig for it not to be hard on the way up. So, I mean, obviously it happens occasionally with, you know, you sort of fall into it, but I feel like usually, for that, it gets harder on the way out, too. So, I mean, there's got to be a challenge to Sitting up here on Talking with Chris Hardwick.
But is the success of Silicon Valley, is that, are you comfortable with it?
I expect it.
He takes full credit.
Yeah. Doy. Comfortable with it? I don't know. You definitely adjust. I think when it first started happening, it was like, okay, this is more than like the odd person being like, I saw your show last night at UCB. Like, it's just, it's more than that. But I don't know. It's certainly a luxury that you have to get used to, because I mean, so much stuff happens. Like, I mean, I came here in a car that had a driver in it. You know? It's like,
well, a lot of people can. There's Uber now. You know that, right? Nah. Lyft. I mean, that's not
this driver was special.
Okay.
He made an explicit point to tell me it wasn't Uber.
I think you know, when people are sort of born into being at some type of comedy entity, it's like what we talked about before, that it's maybe you were bullied, or maybe it was a defensive thing, or maybe you just didn't feel comfortable around other people. And so I'm always curious to find out, when people start getting success, when they're sort of used to being the underdog, is it weird? Does it feel weird? And is it, you know, because I'm sure you probably and I collectively know a ton of people who got weird or who get self-destructive or who aren't comfortable with it.
I look at it as it's going to affect you no matter what.
Right.
It depends on how susceptible you are, what your inner workings are, but there's no way for it not to affect you in any way, I think. It's going to get you.
There's something about it, though, that's like, given what you're saying, like, because we genuinely like each other, and shooting the show is like, it was funny when you were talking about the reason Freaks and Geeks was fun, as you just remember running around and being a kid and not feeling particularly apprehensive about the quality of the show.
And we had fun shooting it, too. I mean, the same way that we do.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I was like, obviously we care about the quality of the show, but I suspect looking back on the show, whenever it's over, it'll be like a similar sort of sentiment. Like, the experience is so...
rich.
Yeah, it's rich. Yeah, it sounds obnoxious, but not you...
Thanks. Thanks, Zach. Yeah, cool. Wow. You know what? I think I'm going to get out of here.
We genuinely like each other.
We did, but
I felt self-conscious because I was like, it articulated a vulnerable feeling. So I wasn't.
You felt like you peed your gi and everyone's looking
at
it.
That's what it was. Exactly. I think Rich is a...
We're live.
I'll tell them about my feelings. But anyway, that it's a small, like, whatever minor strangeness exists around on the periphery of that experience when you're on a show that works, if it's like, it's such a small, I guess I just think it's like, I don't really understand it if people hate it. Like, sometimes people will be on a show that's like a great show and then they're like,
almost mad or resentful.
Yeah.
Or like flippant about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think it's important to remember that it's, you kind of went to Vegas and you rolled sixes or whatever craps term is.
Yep.
And you're like, whoa, okay. And to not take that for granted, and to also not take that and be like, I'm going to buy this place or whatever, is super important. To ride that middle line of like, of accepting and also being aware of it, I think is super important. I mean, it's a very fortunate thing that's happened, and it's probably a weird stock market graph that with highs and lows to follow. But, you know, why not just at least give yourself a pat on the back for now? Otherwise, you'll die.
Sweet dreams. What about for you, Martin?
I mean, all that's accurate. I think you have to go through hard times to appreciate this. And I've been on a few shows that didn't find success the way that they perhaps deserved, or it seemed like could have happened in the right scheme of things. And this is getting the support from HBO and from critics and like
fans.
All of that, and fans. I mean, it's really like reaching, it's hitting the mark on what we're trying to do, and people are appreciating it. And all of those things are kind of independently working together to create the success that we're now able to see and fortunate enough to be a part of. So I find it very unique, because I've been through the failure of something great dwindling away because it didn't have all the right necessary components.
Yeah.
So it's different. Like, I mean, we've all struggled in our own way. I didn't necessarily, I mean, I definitely got picked on, but I wasn't on a cruise ship. All right.
Is that your lowest?
No, no, no.
Lowest bar you
no, no. I mean,
never got that bad.
I wasn't on a cruise ship with old men and women just wiggling their dangly bits about.
Is it? Was that the theme of the cruise?
Yeah.
Wiggling dangly bits?
It was like a, it was an elder's swinging.
Were any of them nude, nudist cruises?
That would have been, I would have never left if that was.
What are you guys most excited about for season four? For Silicon.
Can we talk about the app? Are we allowed to talk about...
I'm not sure. I don't
There's
know
There's a
what...
cool app that happens that you should look forward to. It's very simple in its premise, but it is a glorious thing.
That's
that's
a plot
kind
point
of all
of the
I
show.
Can say. This is really sucks. I don't know if I'm...
No, that's a nice little tease. Now that people know there's something coming.
How long ago did you guys shoot the season?
We wrapped end of February.
Yeah. Okay, so it just a fast turnaround.
It's really only like 4 months, and within there, there's like a month break. It's pretty chill.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and then we get the rest of the year to, you know, just sit. just sit around, go to Wii Spa.
Oh my God, I can't believe... Why did the audience get super behind Wii Spa?
A couple people have been.
Koreatown in the house.
It wasn't just excitement. There was kind of an evil laugh.
Yeah, like, I get what you mean.
Do you like, you liked Wii Spa? It's not. I went one time.
Immediately shut down.
No, because you get recognized and someone would be like, hey, Chris, right? Hey, can I get a selfie?
Hey, those are your balls. Look at that. Those are your balls.
Yeah, that's why I stopped going.
Way too much nudity. Like, way too much.
That's why you go.
I'm
no, that's why you don't go.
You.
If you can't I'm be not, nude in I front can't. Of a bunch of old Asian guys, I don't know when you can.
But it wasn't just old people. It was like... It was every age demographic just running around being way too comfortable. And I don't know what it is about old people in particular, but they'll just get right up and put a leg up and go, so, what do you do?
Yeah.
What do you like to do? Just
make sure you keep it
so here. You're on that show. Hey, he's on the show.
All right. Hey, man.
He's on the show. Tell me about, do we get a picture? Can we get a selfie?
No, we don't do selfies.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it just feels so invasive.
I remember it like it was so impressive that I remember it. I remember sitting in the old steam room, or I was on the way out of it, and I saw two guys enter, and they probably should have been on that show Vikings, because they were like 6'5" Norse gods, cut as hell, and like literally the Liberty Bell, like, dong dong, and I was just like.
Can I get a desk attendant?
And meanwhile, they're like chiming in noon at London. So it's like, it's so, they come in all shapes and sizes, my point.
I am not, some of them are conical.
Yeah.
But that idea of like super comfortable nudity is just never, and I try to get around. I go, okay, you're born naked? It's natural? Everyone, you were not born naked.
No, I was born wearing a cardigan.
We have to go take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to have people from the audience come up and ask their questions. We're going to give away prizes. Plus, we're going to hear from you on social media. Remember, if you want to be a part of the show, we're at Talking on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You'll find exclusive updates about upcoming shows. Ask any questions you have for our guests, because we absolutely want you to be involved and be a part of the conversation. More with Martin, Zach, and Thomas right after this. Welcome back to Talking with Chris Hardin. My guests are Martin Starr, Zach Woods, and Thomas Middleditch, the stars of Silicon Valley. People love your show. I mean, it's like every once in a while a show will come along where people get rabid about it. I mean, do you get assaulted in public with adoration?
Not assaults, but people will come up and say, hey, and they like the show and whatnot. It's kind of fun because it's about like a 80-20 split of like, hey, I love the show, to, hey, I can't watch the show because it reminds me of my life too much, and it's like way too stressful and all that kind of stuff. I kind of like those more.
Yeah, because we just from stuff around the, just from getting stuff from the internet, M. Turner Films says the writing on the show continues upward episode after episode. Thank you, Mike Judge, for a beautiful creation. TKD on Twitter says, as someone who currently works in tech, I'm ecstatic to write a mock episode for my Writing for Electronic Media course. Karen Travers on Twitter says, the scene where Richard unknowingly vents to a tech reporter is excruciating. My stomach hurt. I wanted to hug him. And then Audio Burrow on Twitter says, I just want someone to look at me the way Jared looks at Richard. And then it got wildly inappropriate. It got wildly inappropriate. Julia Bird on Twitter, I love at Silicon Valley HBO, but sometimes I'm so distracted by Martin Starr being hot and smoldering in the background.
Oh.
It's a good problem. Yeah, look at that smolder boiling that water.
We've recently discovered that there's a lot of fan fiction erotica.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm sure.
And
there's
art,
a ton of
science erotic art. There's oh, perfect.
There's art, prose, all of it.
Well, especially after the season one finale, we didn't actually have the piece to put in the background there.
It's reminiscent.
But just
without dicks.
Without the dicks.
Without the dicks, it's very reminiscent.
They had a Stanford math professor go over the math of that.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it's real math.
It's real math.
You know, are you familiar with what we're talking about? They essentially don't have a presentation, so they just start talking about how they would efficiently jerk off everyone in the audience. And then it ultimately solves the problem.
Yeah, they get sidetracked in this math equation, and then the math equation, ends up. If you haven't seen it, oops.
Which is something, it's season 4 is coming up. Fuck you for not catching up.
What are you doing here?
What are you doing with your lives? What are you, Superman? but just that, I can imagine that multiple engineers have probably come up and said, that's exactly the kind of stuff we do instead of working.
Sure, yeah. A lot of the time it's like that, they'll quote some scene like that lady quoted about the spilling the beans to the reporter. They'll quote something and be like, that happened to me. That verbatim happened to me. Because, our guys, the writing team goes to the Bay Area and like mines for stories. So it may have actually been the exact same story. Who knows?
But it is that, there's the one thing that particularly you are a guy who wants to do the right thing, but also still tries to seem like he's suppressing the desires for, to scale up and do bigger and do better and do great things. But
he self-sabotages. Like Richard, I think he's got pride, which gets him at times. He also is obsessed. He's obsessed with efficiency, and when he sees things that aren't efficient, he riles himself up because he's a tightly wound man.
What do you think drives Jared? It just seems like order and goodness and and rightness and support.
I think just like fierce mother's love, basically, is like at the core of all that. I think he just like feels like I always think of the show as like a family where like TJ Ehrlich is kind of like the boisterous father. And Kumail Dinesh is probably like the little boy, and Guilfoyle's like the cat, the like watchful,
the satanic cat.
Yeah, and Richard's like the favored son, and then Jared's like the like doting mom.
But why did he imprint on Richard so much?
And the way I always think about it, it's like Pinocchio, where like he was Gavin's puppet. At Hooli, and then like the blue fairy showed up and was like, "You can be a real boy." and then he was like, in my head, like his life sort of began with Pied Piper. Like it's like a BCAD thing.
Yeah.
Although I guess that's about death, but just a demarcating line.
Sure.
Yeah.
And did you actually? Did you do a lot of backstory on Satanism? And did you study a lot of Satanism?
I read a little bit of the Satanic Bible.
Because Guilfoyle's a Satanist.
Spoiler alert. It's interesting. It's not as, like, I didn't think it was bad. like, Satan's pretty cool, man.
Yeah, he's chill.
Explains the red t-shirt you got sporting today.
You guys should get on board.
Hey, guys, it's Sunday. It's a casual Satan day. Coming in red t-shirts. There are some very inappropriate, delightfully inappropriate...
Such as
Classical Sax on Twitter says, "Can we start replacing Tom Hiddleston with Thomas Middleditch? I would rather see his sexy face." Not so inappropriate, but heading in the right direction. Ehrlich Blachman on Twitter said, the way they spelled it, Blachman, is Zach Woods DTF?
I mean, not categorically.
Okay.
Not in every situation, but not, sometimes. Who is it? Blachman?
Ehrlich.
Who is this?
Ehrlich Blachman, BLAZ. And then Shim Changeman on Twitter says, "Why are my titties not in Zach Wood's mouth right now?"
I will say,
yeah.
I I will say, there is a rabid online, like, sexual hunger for Zach Wilson.
Really?
I mean, I get it. I do. But, like, he's not on social media anywhere. Anytime I put a picture on Instagram and he's in it, it's, like, the most likes I ever get. A lot of the comments, a lot of them are like, this guy fucks. But, I remember a line. I remember a line from the show. But also, I mean, you know, women be after it.
Well, yeah. This is the happiest day of my life.
Is there enough of Zach Wood's conical penis to go around?
Of course, that's the good thing about a cone. It just goes out and out and out.
We have a lovely audience member who's going to ask a question now. You can stand up and ask, hey, what is your name, sir?
My name is Jansen.
Hey, Jansen.
I'm from Burbank.
Hi.
And I was wondering if any of you have ever been fired from a job, and if so, what were the circumstances?
Ooh. Yeah, you mean like an acting job, or you mean like
anything? Yeah,
any old job. Go ahead.
No.
Okay. All right. I'll start it off. I've only really had one other job. I was a barista for one day, and they didn't call me back. So you could call that being fired. I made $2.
What drinks did you make?
I was really basic stuff. Basic stuff, man. It was one day. It was my training day, and it didn't go so well. I thought I was learning pretty quick, but I wasn't. Turns out I wasn't.
Zach?
I briefly sold haircuts on the street in New York.
What?
Yeah, it was a horrible job.
How do you sell haircuts
on the
street?
Yeah, how do you sell them?
You're dressed plain clothes, and someone, like when people go past, you go, can I ask you about your hair? And then if they're foolish or kind enough to stop, then you try to sell them the stupid haircut at a different location. And it was a horrible job. There's this one guy who worked there who was, like, so nice. And he'd talk to people and he'd be like, you know, you just need to take a little time for self-care and you deserve it. And then once I saw a woman go, like, oh, I'm actually not interested. And he wolf-manned into a different person. He was like, you deserve it. Look, let's take care of those cuticles, too. And she was like, I'm not interested. And then he went, I'm just trying to make you look good, you bitch.
And she turned around. She was like, she went, what?
Because she was like astonished. And he went, what? Like that, like barked at her, but she bought the haircut.
You can't argue.
She
with,
did it. She did.
Oh, see.
But and so after that, and then they stationed just outside a hospital, selling haircuts outside a hospital where my grandmother had been. And I was like, I didn't get fired, but I was like, not selling haircuts outside a hospital with a sex predator.
Hey, you need a haircut? You want to give me a haircut? I'll buy you shoes.
You know what? I feel like I'm gonna. I feel like I have something good for you, and this is. This is a very special Pied Piper.
Oh, no. You're a Piper.
He's Piper.
That signs.
You can play it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, quick.
Yeah. Here's a video message someone sent in. Take a look.
Hey, guys. Russ here from Seattle, Washington. Question for you. What is the most annoying thing a cast member does, either on or off set? Thanks.
All right. I guess he wants to start shit between you guys.
Most annoying?
That was a message from Valhalla.
Was that one of the guys that walked into the sun?
Rare. Shots fired.
Yeah, ciao.
Annoying things.
That's a front-loaded contentious question.
Mm-hmm. Well, I tell you, if I go to craft services and if there's not a cheese string there, I get pretty pissed.
I'm glad the job's not going to your head.
I don't get a Perrier, I go nuts.
We were sort of collectively annoying for a while where we got, do you know what a credit card is? I mean, like the
when you go credit or debit along someone's butt crack?
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's just, when do you debit?
You go credit or debit.
Well,
we start doing it.
But let's talk about how it started.
Yeah, how did it start?
I started crediting people.
Yeah, you started crediting.
No, somebody grabbed somebody's.
No, that was after.
That was after.
So we developed a whole system. So it was like credit or debit, and then you do cash back rebate, which was.
A reach under?
I know what.
It really picked up when the word cash came into play.
That's right.
And somebody was standing at a.
This is my annoying bit. is everybody claims that all the bits happen are like everybody's. I brought this to the table.
Okay, you will get credit for the credit card.
Thank you. And cash.
You're the Ben Franklin, the Nikola Tesla of
predator of grabbing
people's
cash.
Yeah, you're the Nikola Tesla of grabbing people.
When you accidentally grabbed Kumail's schnitzel.
On purpose.
Okay,
so and you said cash. What is the,
because, you know, it's an elementary thing to go creditor debit. It's something stupid that kids do. I mean, that's how I know.
Yes.
And then
so this is our bet, our collective bet. Go ahead, go on.
And so in order to, like, and it's pretty assaultive, right? You know, someone, like, gets their hand in your crack.
I mean, it's like you're literally fun. Going into the crack.
I mean, that's really how you get them.
Have
you
never been creditor debit?
It's like, Jesus. and so in my mind, in order to, like, counteract being, like, assaulted like that, instead of being defensive, you one-up it. You go, like, immediately go, cash. You know? So if someone does that, it's like, and then you win. Then you win. Gotcha, then you have the
what
power.
Are you winning,
oh, wait a
really?
Second. Wasn't this, yes. Did you make this Bitcoin?
No. Amanda got involved.
That's right.
And so now it's weird because, like, there's a girl, like, what can we?
We can't
cash her. And then that, I will say, that was group escalating it to Bitcoin, and Bitcoin is, I guess, grabbing nipples. We didn't Bitcoin hurry.
Okay, good. I'm glad to hear that.
She was
very aggressive about cash because she was from behind a duck blind. Like, there's no, you can't get her back, so she
She was more of a credit carder.
Yeah, she's more credit carder.
She'd snipe you.
Essentially, we're grown humans grabbing each other's butts and penises.
But I think that's what people want to... I know that legitimately...
People want to know that?
You know why? Because when you have a show where everyone gets along and the whole cast is screwing around and they're legitimately friends, it really does affect the quality of the show. Like, you can tell there's just an authenticity to it where it's like, oh, these people genuinely connect. And so I think that stuff really is weirdly important.
Nine times out of ten, I think it's a good thing. But then every so often, I just catch, like, someone on the crew just being like, ugh. Like, looking at their watch, like, I'm never gonna get home because these guys are literally grab-ass.
Do you guys go into, like, bit rabbit holes that just never end?
Uh-huh. To the point where the assistant director has to be like, can we get you in another room, please? Because you're screaming right now.
And then you have the force of nature that is T.J. Miller, who is...
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about TJ is like nonstop bits. Like, there was a period of about a year where he was walking around to comedy shows with a bodyguard and just being like, this is my bodyguard, and not, but then not explaining it, and he just had a bodyguard.
Our first season, this is my favorite TJ, but he showed up to the premiere and to all the press stuff with a grill, like a gold grill, and when people would ask him about it, he'd go, oh, it's corrective.
It's funny. We have another time for another audience question. Stand up. Hello, what is your name?
Hi, I'm Patty from Minnesota.
Nice to meet you, Patty from Minnesota.
Welcome.
What is your question?
My question is, do you guys hang outside of work? Do you hang outside, and what do you do?
Uh-huh. So, yes, we do. And a whole variety of things. I mean, it's a lot going on here. We've danced together. We drink the alcohols.
I have witnessed this. Occasionally, Kumail and his wife Emily will have pool parties, and everyone hangs out and swims the swimming parties.
We do actually genuinely make an effort to hang out together. Especially, we should probably we're due for a good old hang.
Yeah. We're doing dinner on Friday.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, that's right. Tomorrow,
we're having dinner in Martin's house tomorrow.
I mean, it's usually, what do we do? It's usually just, like, try and make each other laugh. Occasionally there'll be an activity, but we're quite content to just sit around a table and do bits, to be honest.
We did stargaze recently.
Yeah, we stargazed. A late night stargaze on near the Santa Monica Pier, where we witnessed a couple having sex. And
did you credit or debit them? Credit or debit? Cash back.
We had a fantasy of, like, we've talked about it because chances are they don't watch the show, but if they had watched the show, we wanted to come around, like, come stand around them, because how weird if you were, like, on the beach having sex at night and then, like, you looked up and you, like, love ER and there's, like, Juliana Margulies. Like, it'd be so weird and surreal, and no one else is on the beach, but we
can
didn't
we
do
say
it.
Nothing?
Yeah. Hi, we're the cast of Silicon Valley. Yeah.
Just want you to wish you a happy sex.
happy sex.
Happy sex.
Speaking of happy sex day, I have a Zach Woods
signed mouse pad. There it is. You're very welcome. Here's another video message from a fan.
Hi, this is Brian from Satterton, Pennsylvania. What I'd like to know is, what's your most embarrassing moment when performing on stage?
Oh.
Wow.
In short, failing.
Yeah. Nothing beats that.
Nothing beats a good failure. I did this one. So when I first moved to New York, I wasn't immediately in the UCB community. I was kind of just sort of like, okay, what do I do now? And so I would do these like character bits at some like cabaret spaces, you know, trying to be, I guess, Kaufman-esque, but like somehow more alienating. and so I remember doing this one bit where, you know, the thing is with like character bits, you gotta like commit to them. So if they don't, and they're pretty tightly written. So if you don't like, if you don't get them on a crowd on board, you've still got like, you know, 6 minutes of just like probably super intense, panicked.
And it's not even
stuff.
Like music where you could at least get lost in the music. Yeah. It's a bit.
Yeah, you got a hook and it's like, that's what it is, folks. So if you don't like it, we're screwed. doing all kinds of stuff and just, yeah, essentially being on stage with no one laughing is probably pretty horrendous.
What's something that you look back now that you did on stage and that you cringe to think that you did on stage?
One, it's not that crazy, but like, so I would do these character bits, and if at one point someone was like, come to this club, like an actual stand-up club, you know, these clubs where you've got like two drink minimums and it's like, you know, kind of fancy, it's someone's night out. And I'm like, okay, I mean, it's kind of more of an alternative comedy thing, but sure, I'll give it a shot. And I, sure enough, I did it. I played this dad who's like panicked, kind of losing it. I think there's probably clips on YouTube of it actually going reasonably well. But he's just like, my wife left me. That kind of like, yeah, kind of a little bit hack stuff. But I remember it's not getting much laughs. And I remember a girl in the front row being like, oh, poor guy. Like, but like thinking that the character is real. Like not even understanding the disconnect of a character. Like responding to this guy who's theoretically going through this tough divorce, being like, oh no one's getting this on any
like
level.
She just thought this guy's going through divorce and he got up on stage
and he got up on stage and he's talking about it like, what a dummy. Well, like,
but that's such an interesting distinction between like mainstream comedy and alternative comedy. Is an alternative audience will come in expecting something to happen, but a mainstream audience will take pretty much everything you say literally.
Yeah.
You have to be like, no, this is, why would you think this is real? This isn't a real guy. You got to explain it.
Oh, and BlizzCon was pretty rough. What about you?
Oh, you did BlizzCon.
That was terrible.
At your wedding party in New Orleans, I'd never been to New Orleans before, and me and my girlfriend at the time went to this jazz club, and it was a real rough show. We didn't really like it, and was getting up to leave, and as we were leaving, the woman on stage was like, you, come up here. And I was like, oh, no, I'm actually going to go. She's like, you come up or I'm going to bring you up.
Oh.
And I was like, okay. And I got up on stage and she gave me a tambourine. And she was like, now you're going to do the gangster lean. And she sang this song. And periodically she would make me do the gangster lean, which was like you'd have to shake the tambourine and lean back like I guess gangsters lean back.
When they're playing the tambourine.
Yeah, gangsters when they play tambourine have bad posture. And it was truly mortifying. And I remember making eye contact with my girlfriend and seeing like such a complicated cocktail of emotions in her eyes, like delight, like pity. It was really horrible.
Oh.
And somewhere and while I was on stage, a guy next to me was like, hey, are you in Silicon Valley?
Do you have that recent?
Yeah, it was a few months ago.
Yeah.
Do you have one of those stories?
Last year.
Because you don't do a lot of live. I've seen you do stuff on stage before.
I rapped at a Buddhist meeting and I forgot the words.
What?
In front of 2,000 people, forgot the words. And then just picked it up and kept going. But it was a Buddhist meeting, so people were really nice about it. Like nobody thought anything of it.
Of all the audiences you could have, that was the most understanding.
It was the perfect audience for it.
By the way, we have the uncut extended version of this chat is available as a podcast at Nerdist. Also go to amc.com/talking for bonus clips, exclusive content, as well as links to the Nerdist podcast for every one of the episodes. More with the cast of Silicon Valley. We'll be right back in a moment. Welcome back. My guests are past Silicon Valley, Martin Starr, Zach Woods, and Thomas Middleditch. It is time for the live studio audience to ask some more questions. Someone hop on up and ask a question. There he is. What is your name?
Hi, I'm Leonard from Seattle, Washington.
Hey, Leonard, welcome. What is your question?
When you guys are out and about, has anyone ever asked you for any IT advice?
That's true. A lot of people who watch television think that all shows are documentaries.
Yeah.
And they will ask real questions.
Not so much advice, but I've definitely got caught in like a super technical wormhole and had to be like, I play video games, but that's about it. You know, like, I also kind of bring it on myself because sometimes I'm like, fascinating, tell me more, you know, it's some interesting thing. But bizarrely, the kind of the biggest perpetrators are not necessarily the lowly programmers, but like the CEOs who kind of feel like since they're so rich and powerful, you owe them. I've been bossed into a conversation or two by quite a drunken and surly
CEO.
Yeah.
We feel like because you're doing a story about their world that they own you in some way.
Yeah, kind of. It's been weird at times. Yeah. Anyone else?
Bill Gates? Was it Bill Gates?
No, I'm sure he'd be perfectly well-mannered.
Anytime anyone asks for any kind of IT advice, I just say take a powerful magnet and put it on your hard drive.
I have a special present for you. Let's see. What do we have for you? How about...
There's so many trinkets.
How about your Richard Hendricks Hooli badge? This gets you into the Hooli office. Where's your camera there? Here's your camera right here. Thank you. Thank you very much. Nice to meet you. Here's another video message.
Hi, guys. Brian from Montana. What show, past or present, would you have loved to have been a part of? Thanks.
Roseanne.
We found out they're not necessarily bringing that back, but fans are trying to get enough.
I'm on board. Trying
to get that back.
I'm one of those fans.
What about you?
A show in the past that I would have loved to have been a part of. I grew up watching NYPD Blue.
Oh, yeah.
But that can't be my answer. Let me think.
Why not?
I don't know.
Don't hold yourself back.
I would bring nothing to the table on NYPD Blue.
You could be a great perp.
I'd be a corpse. I'd like to be a corpse on
NYPD Blue. You would like to be a corpse on NYPD Blue. Middle dish.
You kind of stole my answer, but now I got to think of something else. I don't know, man. There's lots. Game of Thrones, Baskets, The Wire. I mean, it would be like, there's so many good shows. British Office and Extras. Like, I love when Gervais and Merchant team up together. The Mighty Boosh, all that shit. There's so many things that I'd be like, God, that would be so incredible.
I 100% would love to have been on The Golden Girls. That show is so 100% funny. Because that's Mitch Hurwitz and Jim Vallely and, like, all these really great comedy writers who went on to create Arrested Development. And, you know, like, that... I feel like the jokes on that show were so tight, and everyone on that show... There's one channel, I can't remember what channel it is, but they just... It might be Lifetime. It's just on always. It's never not on. And whenever I stumble across it, I just am transfixed.
You know what I saw kind of recently on a rerun that I was like, this is very good. Home Improvement. I watched it a lot as a kid, and then I always see kind of like made fun of it, you know, in post. And then I was catching it, and I'm like, oh, look, it's so subtle, and like, you know,
he's growing up. Our boy is growing up. He likes Home Improvement.
Home Improvement. Oh my God, everybody loves Raymond.
I don't think you got the full appreciation that you deserve for that Ray Romano impersonation.
Oh, no.
I'd like to talk to Ray Romano for a moment, if I please. Tell the story again about being in the sauna at the spa, but as Ray Romano.
Wait, please. Please?
So I walked out the sauna, and oh my God, these two Vikings with the big dicks.
They wouldn't say that. No, it's terrible. That was bad. That was bad.
I was worried you were having a stroke. Do you smell toast? Are you okay? Is your arm numb? We have time for one more question for the audience. Hello, what is your name?
Hi, I'm Mark from Glendale.
Hi.
My question is, in the scenes when Ehrlich is smoking weed, is he really smoking weed? And if so, how many takes does it take to get that down?
How many tokes does it take to get
Ehrlich to High.
To the center of the...
We don't use weed because that would be irresponsible, but it is crack cocaine.
Yep.
Yep.
And the answer is one take, and he is unusable.
Let's see. I think this is a very special... Oh, look at this. A very special script for you with a little calculator inside. It's a signed by everyone. Silicon Valley script. That's for you. You're very welcome. As we're kind of wrapping this up, what is... What's your favorite part of the show? What's your favorite part about being involved in the show?
Oh, goodness. And there's a lot. I get to do a show that I think is really funny with good friends and really talented people on a network that is super supportive. So, I don't know. That.
Okay, Zach?
It's hard to answer without feeling slightly embarrassed. I think it's
His is that he likes to accidentally come into my dressing room and see me. He'll never
see
it.
That's what it is. And then it's like, oh, what's this camera doing here? I love the people and I love the material. And, also it's so egoless. I think like the show's created by Mike Judge and Alec Berg, and then both of those guys are like, basically like comedy luminaries, and they're still so collaborative. Like they could really be like auteurs and use you sort of as their chess piece, but they're so open and they work their asses off, all the writers. And I don't know, it's hard not to sound like a press release when you talk about it, but I just like love it with my whole heart.
Hold on. Let's get that printed up. Cause that's our new press release.
That's a new press release. Yeah. What about you, Martin?
There's just so much love in all sides and all ways. I think. I mean, the entire crew and care about it so much more than they need to be there. They're all so talented. I mean, we have like our whole set deck department is incredible and far more meticulous than they need to be, and they make it so nerds who live in this world. And I don't say that in a negative way. I think nerd is for me, has a positive connotation. I think the nerds that live in this world are like, oh, I know that. And they tweet about it. And they're like, this is amazing. And it was just a little thing that's in one shot in the background of an episode. So it's so important for everybody. Everybody loves it so much.
What's your favorite part about Guilfoyle?
I mean, it's just fun playing with Kumail. When Kumail and I have this, you know, terrible husband and wife banter, it's the best. Clearly, I'm the husband. Moving on.
You know, I would like to revise my answer. It actually is just seeing Thomas's ding-dong. Yeah. All that stuff about love, I was thinking about it. It's like, it doesn't really ring true. It's really just the nudity.
It's really just the nudity and coming in and seeing Thomas four months out of the year.
I leave the door unlocked.
Yeah. We like to get naked.
It's cashback rebate. That's the best thing about the show.
Yeah. Zach, Jared speaks in German in his sleep. Is this something sort of saying that, talking about like we just bring in stuff that happened?
Okay, so I will explain this, but just understand that I'm Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
My whole family's Jewish. I took karate at a Jewish community center. I have great love and respect for the Jewish people, being one of them. But when I was in college one morning, my college roommate, well, I woke up and he was like, hey man, you okay? And I was like, yeah, what are you talking about? And he was like, I was up late last night writing a paper, and in the middle of the night you were asleep, and then you shot up and made eye contact with me and said, I hate the Jews. And then went back to sleep. And I told Alec Berg that story, and I think that may have been part of the inspiration.
Part of the inspiration for that. This was amazing. Thank you guys so much for being on. Martin Starr, Zach Woods, Thomas Middleditch. Silicon Valley is Sunday night on HBO. Watch it. Catch up if you're not caught up. Season 4 is coming up. I can't believe it's been 4 seasons already. That's insane. Always check out at Talking on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter to find out what's going to be on the show, who's going to be on the show, how you can be involved and be a part of it. I'm Chris Hardwick, at Hardwick on the tweets and Instagram. Do not text and drive, please. I will see you next week. Good night. Bye-bye.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito. For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.